detour to talk about what was going on. I think that was a good thing. But we're gonna jump back into it this morning. Talk a little bit about, we're gonna be in Jeremiah chapter 2, where we're gonna start reading here. If y'all remember back a couple weeks ago, we talked about Josiah. He was kind of the last godly king of Judah before their demise, and then there's a couple kings post-Jeremiah, and then we have, we're actually going to be in Jeremiah, but, did I say Jeremiah?
Uh-huh.
Josiah. Oh, Josiah was the king. I don't know if I mixed those two up just now. But Josiah was the king. He was the last godly king. And then after that, things kind of fall apart. And then we're actually going to be in the book of Jeremiah, which is again going to fall under the prophet books. And what he's doing is presenting a word from God as to what's to come. And so we have this, what a lot of people see as prophecy, like the overarching to prophesy is a lot more than just predicting the future, but this kind of falls under, categorizes what a lot of folks see as biblical prophecy, as what's to come. And so we're going to read through that a little bit. There's a couple points that I hope we pick out. One thing that really stood out to me that was a little bit kind of a aha moment that we'll talk about a little bit. But these books are sometimes, there's a poem in here, we can get into the weeds pretty fast. Isaiah is another one of those books that everybody's like, whoa, what is going on? This one isn't quite to that extent, but follow along as best you can. What's happening now is, again, the title of our text here is God Warns Judah. He's telling them what's about to come. He's telling them of their iniquities, what they've done, and giving this well-laid-out response to, this is what I'm going to do, and every kid's question is why, right? So he's also giving us both sides of this story. So he's going to tell us the why, and he's going to tell us what's to come. I do want to read in Ephesians, the memory verse. It's on all y'all's books. Ephesians 2, verse 4 through 5. But God, being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. By grace you have been saved. So I want to point that out for a couple reasons. When we read texts like this, sometimes it's hard to see the totality of Christ, of God's character as far as his grace and mercy. We start to look at this, and this is where people get off on the Old Testament God, right? This is where people try to differentiate between the two when they're the same person. You're just seeing the totality of his character, because just as merciful and just as much being rich in mercy, because of the great love with which he loved us, even when we're dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. Though all that is true, there's still the just part of God. And just as graceful and merciful as God is, there's also the side that people don't like to spend as much time on, which is he's just. God is just. Or there wouldn't be a purpose in us following, right? Because if he wasn't just, then the deal could change 100 times and everything could go haywire and it's remember the devotion of your youth, your love as a bride, how you followed me in the wilderness in a land not sown. Israel was holy to the Lord, the fruit, the first fruits of his harvest. All who ate of it incurred guilt. Disaster came upon them, declares the Lord. Hear the word of the Lord, O house of Jacob, and all the clans of the house of Israel. Thus says the Lord, what wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness and became worthless? They did not say, where is the Lord who brought us up from the land of Egypt, who led us in the wilderness, in a land of deserts and pits, in a land of drought and deep darkness, in a land that none passes through, where no man dwells? And I brought you into a plentiful land to enjoy its fruits and its good things. But when you came in, you defiled my land and made my heritage an abomination. The priest did not say, where is the Lord? Those who handled the law did not know me. The shepherds transgressed against me. The prophets prophesied by Baal and went after things that do not profit. Therefore I still contend with you, declares the Lord, and with your children's children I will contend. For cross to the coast of Cyprus and sea, or send to Kedar and examine with care, see if there has been such a thing. Has a nation changed its gods, even though they are no gods? But my people have changed their glory for that which does not profit. Be appalled, O heavens, at this. Be shocked. Be utterly desolate, declares the Lord. Oh. That's what hit me today. He said, does even these foreign places change their gods? These wicked people who worship wood and stone and idols and things that are not God, even they stick to their gods, per se. But my people, the people who worship the only God, what do they do? They start chasing all the wood and all the stone and all the garbage, right? Wow. Even these people who worship just stuff, right? Stuff that's created by them. There's a verse. I'm going to pull it up. I wasn't going to do this, but I'm going to pull it up now. Also also fashions a god and worships it. He makes an idol and bows down to it. Half of the wood burns in the fire. Over it he prepares his meal. He roasts his meat and eats his fill. He also warms himself and says, "Ah, I am warm. I see the fire." For the rest he makes a god, his idol. He bows down to it and worships. He prays to it and says, "Save me. You are my God." Doesn't that kind of put it in perspective? Right? Half of what you're creating this God with, you put in the fire so that you can heat your home, so that you can cook food over it. The blacksmith doesn't drink water and he grows weary, he gets tired, he gets faint. These are the people that are making your so-called gods, right? And so flip back to this, we're talking about idols, we're talking about other people. And to the totality of it, we're saying, hey, even the folks that do this, that worship what? Their own creation, right? Out of wood, out of iron, out of whatever the case may be, whether it's a blacksmith making it or a woodworker, whatever the case may be, these people are creating it. Out of stuff that who makes grow? God, right? God sends the rain to make this tree grow. God puts all the elements in the earth. God does all this, and they take that out, and they use part of it to feed themselves or warm themselves, and they just burn it, right? And with the other part of it, guess what they do? They create a god, right? Even these people that create just something themselves, that put a name on it, and then move on with life and worship it and say, "Oh God, save me." These are the people that aren't turning their backs on their own creation. Powerless. That are not gods. And y'all are my people. God's people, the one and only. And what do you guys do? You turn away. The people worshiping their own creation are the people that stick behind it, right? And the people worshiping the Creator God are the people who turn away. That is just a crazy concept. When I read that, I was just appalled. Not even just for the time, but the time period of these people, but for us sitting here right now. Because how many people are there out there that are like, "Hey, come see this, come see this, come see this," and how many Christians turn their backs on what they know as the Creator God to worship a statue what was big a while ago was this, because it was the peace and love and all this time was like the Hinduism and the Buddhism, and you have your little baby Buddha statues. And I had a friend growing up and they had a little baby Buddha, and they're like, this is just a person and an idol and a creation.
You're doing that today.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, this isn't something that's gone with the wind, right? This is something that's ever prevalent today. And then sitting here as God's people, right? We worship the God, the Creator.
Well, how many of us have something that we are very, very fond of, and sometimes it comes before God?
Right? There can be idols and all. I mean, money. Kevin's talked about that. Money, you know, and anything that you put above them is considered an idol. But again, and that's...
We're not burning it in the fire, what we have left over.
Well, kind of somewhat, right? I mean, how much money do we waste? How much all? I mean, we can go down all that whole rabbit hole, and that's kind of like a 30-degree tangent we have right there, which we could chase maybe for a second. But yes, we put all these things in front of God, man-made things, and just like what you're talking about, money or whatever our prized possessions in life are, we take these and we take away from God, and though we worship God, we can be just enamored with this stuff. And what Kevin talked about with money, and what I'll reiterate today, is it's all His. Guys, our life, I'm rereading through again reading's way harder than what I do. I listen on audiobook. I don't like reading, but I can listen. I listen through on audiobook, and we have these covenants of the old times. And when we're having these covenants, it's just crazy, because one side follows through, right? It's always God's side. I'm about to get way off, and then I might have to reel it back in. Sorry. But yes, we have all this worship of these humanly things. Well, I'm going to go down that road anyway. This covenant with God, and what God commands Moses is to bring the people of Israel in front of God when they're on this mountain. And it says, bring them in front of me as a sacrament to me. What does that mean? These people as a totality, this whole Israelite nation agreed to this. They walked up and they're like, okay, as a sacrifice to God, we're giving ourselves as a people. Guess what you do when you get baptized? You give what to Christ? Your life. Your life and how much extent of it? Everything. Does that mean hold your finances out? Does that mean hold your home out? Does that mean whatever you have, hold out? Or whatever you have should be used for the glory of God? And 10%? No, in totality. I think that's what Kevin was getting to in our session, that you should take care of your family, right? But everything should be used to the glory of God. Not necessarily in a check written to the church, not necessarily, but everything you have in totality. Yes, take care of your family. That's a godly principle, right? Taking care of your family and making sure that you're going to live. But how much are we holding back for ourselves? What we've got could be used to be blessing people, right? And so we go down these lines of how much should I give, how much should I do that, how much, and the answer is everything. You don't have to sell your house and bring a big check, right? That's not what He's asking for. But He's asking for every second of your life, every minute of your life, and this is where it gets hard. But we learned this, and when we got into the Sermon on the Mount, is this higher standard that we're called to. And yes, for us as humans and human nature that's living in a battlefield, right? Between flesh and blood and spirit, and we're just tore up. I'm going to take that back. It says it's not between flesh and blood, right? The spirits and the powers, and we get divided by this, and our fleshly desire wants this, and God's calling us out of this into something else, and so we're sitting in this weird place where we're not going to get it perfect, but that doesn't negate our calling. And our calling is from 24 hours a day and not a second less. Guess what we should be devoted to? If we've invited God to sit on the thrones of our hearts, guess who's operating us? God. And the Spirit's going to convict you and lead you in that way, but we should be sitting here giving it all over to Him. What does that mean? When we're walking and we feel compelled to do something. How many people have kind of feel this tug towards that, but I'm not going to do it? Guys, that's the Spirit. God will put people on your hearts that you need to reach out to, that you need to lend a hand to, that we feel compelled to do it, but for whatever reason, whether we think it might be awkward or whatever the case may be, we deny God that. When again, as a people, when you give your life to Christ, it's not just saying, hey, I'm going to act better. I'm going to try not to sin anymore, Lord. It's saying, hey, this is my life. Take it. Because I know you're going to do something way bigger, way better with me for your kingdom and your glory than I could ever imagine. Why? Because I'm going to fall short a lot. Guess who never does? Him. So if we're operating through Him, we're not going to fall short. When we take the reins in our own hand, we fall right back into human nature, right? We're going to fall short. We're not going to be perfect at it, but we are called to be perfect at it, which is a really weird line to toe, right? We struggle with that. We wrestle with that. That's okay. It's meant to be wrestled with. When you goof up or you do something bad or you withhold, there's something that typically pulls on you. Who here has felt guilt? That's not a bad thing. You should be thankful for that feeling. Maybe it's the Lord tugging you, saying, come on, right? Hunter, you're protecting your finances. You're not letting me have them. Come on. You're protecting your house. You're not letting me have it. Come on. You're protecting your kids. Protecting your kids. Not letting me after them. Come on. That's a feeling that you should follow. Right? Guess what it takes to get there? You have to know what God's saying, right? Right? You got to be ingrained in the Scriptures and know what's going on. But then we're called to act out of it and give our lives to Christ, and then we all have had that feeling of, man, I might have really messed up. I had one of our employees just the other day call me. He's like, man, I feel like my prayers are being blocked. I've never heard it like that, but I really liked what he was saying. He said, I feel like it's because I need to get this off my chest, and I'm going to tell it to you. And after he confessed it, he was like, whew, I feel a lot better. Called him just the other day. It's like, how you feeling? Great. Right? That's a feeling. The people kind of, there's this voodoo thing around the Spirit, right? Where it makes people uncomfortable to talk about. Guys, that's it, right? It's not this fake thing. He's came to me and was like, man, I feel like my prayers are being blocked. Why? Because I'm avoiding this thing that God told me that I need to confess to. And I feel like until I can get this squared up in my head, we're going to continue down this road. Who's felt that? Right? After that conversation, guess the conversation that I went and had with my wife? The same thing. I said, man, because him coming to me and saying, hey, this is where I sit, made me go, man, I'm feeling really nuts up with the same thing. And I went and had the same exact conversation with my wife. And guess how much better I felt afterwards? Way better. We're starting to see all these links start to come together. And I know we went off on a rabbit hole. committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living water, and hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Is Israel a slave? Is he a homeborn servant? Why then has he become a prey? The lions have roared against him. They have roared loudly. They have made his land a waste. His cities are in ruins without inhabitant. Moreover, the men of Memphis and Tapanhes have shaved the crown of your head. Have you not brought this upon yourself by forsaking the Lord your God when he led you in the way? And now what do you do? What do you gain by going to Egypt to drink the waters of the Nile? Or what do you gain by going to Assyria to drink the waters of the Euphrates? Your evil will chastise you, and your apostasy will reprove you. Know and see that this is evil and bitter. For you to forsake the Lord your God, the fear of me is not in you, declares the Lord God of hosts. For long ago, I broke your yoke and burst your bonds, but you said, I will not serve. Yes, on every high hill and under every green tree, you bowed down like a whore. Yet I planted you a choice vine, holy of pure seed. How then have you turned degenerate and become a wild vine? Though you wash yourself with lye and use much soap, the stain of your guilt is still before me, declares the Lord. Know and see that it is evil and bitter for you to forsake the Lord your God. The fear of me is not in you. Whew, that's a scary testament, right? These folks have gone so far, and again, I want to rehash. These folks that he brought up, and we started off with this depiction of God bringing them through the desert, where it says, no man goes out, no man lives in, and who sustained you? Me. God sustained you through the desert, through where no man lives, and the fear of me is not in you. We go from there to here. The fear of me is not in you, declares the Lord of hosts. How can you say I am not unclean? I have not gone after the Baals. Look at your way in the valley. So what's the people's response to this?
We didn't do anything.
Right? Classic childlike behavior. Brooks, when he gets in trouble, what does he do? Brooks, did you fight Bobby?
Well, I didn't do anything.
Like, well, I see teeth marks, and I just watched what happened. Yes, you did. Right? But these people, as a whole people, are having this same moment. How can you say I'm not unclean? What is it? What's their claim? I'm not unclean. I haven't gone after the Baals. I do look your way, Lord. And what is he saying? I'm watching you. Right? I'm sitting here and amongst all this, I've watched all the indiscretion towards me. And what did I do? I planted the choice vine for you. I gave you everything. No matter your indiscretion or what happened, I took care of you. And I know he's about to buzz me, but right after this, he goes into what's about to happen to him, and he's about to put him in the hands of a foreign country again, and this is going to be the last of Israel as a kingdom, I would say. This is about to get torn apart. They're going to live. I mean, we're going to go through this whole Old Testament until we get to Christ. And guess what? They're still living under during Christ's time. At that point in time, the Romans are, right? So they never shake out from under this. I'm going to open it up because I know we went down a rabbit hole and we've got 5 minutes for comments and questions. Anybody? Assuredly, funny how we can read all this stuff and we can get so caught up in the Lord comes down with his wrath, the Lord does this, the Lord does that, and then you read what they're actually going through, and if you overlay it with your life, you go, how many times have I done the exact same thing? How many times, again, when we go into idol worship, how many times have you created with your own hand? Have you done something with your own hand and put that far above God instead of giving the credit to who he is? We read the scripture in Isaiah about how just crazy it is for somebody to be worshiping their own creation, and half of this wood goes into the fire to heat the house, and the other half of it they're going to carve their idols out, and that's what they're going to worship. But don't forget the flip side of that. He says, even those people aren't turning away from their God. And guess what y'all are doing?
I think we can see that in our own lives. Like, when life gets so busy, and a lot of times it's the pursuit of money that keeps us so busy, and all the things that we can get with the money. And how often is our relationship with God the first thing that kind of gets pushed to the side? Like, I just don't have time for that right now. I have to do all of these other things. And it's the same thing. We're choosing the idols over the living God.
Yes. Just like Kevin has talked about. I think are you wrapped up with the mindset? Yeah. But just as Kevin has talked about it, guys, it's all his. We have to get to the place where we understand it's all his. He's sitting on the thrones of our heart, therefore, who's operating everything? God. God is. Our finances, our home. Who likes to bring a bunch of people into their home all the time? Chloe does. I can see that as truth. I have no doubt that Chloe loves to bring people into her house. All these things that we can put towards discomfort, or just like I was talking, the spirit is compelling you to do one thing and you deny it, right? And then you just have this seeking guilt. It may be different in our lives. It may be a different pull from somebody else, and it's going to look different in your life than it's going to be in my life. Let it go. Hand it all over. It's hard to do, because especially in our society, in the pulling up by your boot, well, maybe that's not our society anymore. But in a pull yourself up by your bootstraps kind of society, we want the reins, right? If I'm ever in football and sports, in whatever, you hear these people that they want the last shot in their hands. You see these people that are considered the greats, the Tom Brady, and anytime the ball's in his hand when he was driving down the field, and they're down by four, and they need a touchdown, guess what every commentator on the planet would say? If there's a guy who wants the ball in his hands, it's him. If there's a guy you want your life in his hands, guess who it is? God, every single time. Give it over. Let him work. When Kevin talked about the giving side of things and money as a general rule, my wife and I are watching Reba again. We like Reba, the TV show. And we're at the point where Van wrote Cheyenne a check for her. He said, well, I've figured out your value around the house, and I've taken in daycare and all this stuff, and I'm gonna start writing you a paycheck. He's doing this to his wife. Reeves going, Van, this is a dangerous joke. She's sitting right there. And he's like, well, you told me to do it. Anyway, long story short, Reeves goes, money is the issue, you have in your marriage. It's the issue, right? Give it over. There's not a percentage. There's not this. There's not that. But how many people have just felt that tug on their heart that they deny? That's what it is. When it's hard, or you might be strapped, or whatever the case may be, and somebody's asking for something, and you feel that tug like you're compelled to do it, and you deny it, you missed. You heard, right? Everybody says, all right, God doesn't talk to us anymore, right? The Spirit's pulling you, right? You heard, you felt. You either accept it or deny. That's with everything in our lives. Give it all over. He's going to manage it way better than you will. Thank y'all for being here.